Asia's a big place. There's so many more events than can fit into this program, so stop by our program page for the day's additional stories at voanews.com/daybreakasia. Millions of tourists visit China each year, and their impressions of the country can vary widely based on their short exposure time. For people like Jim Hammond, the experience was much deeper and the understanding of the Middle Kingdom much richer. He initially spent about 18 months in China living among the people, learning about their lives, dreams for the future, and concerns. His view of China became a book titled New China.
I wasn't a tourist. I lived there amongst the Chinese, and I married a Chinese lady. I didn't stay in hotels. I lived in apartment houses. And I taught English to kids in high school and college, and also some businesses I taught English. That's why I feel my message is perhaps a little better than some from the past, because I wasn't really there to report on China. As a matter of fact, I didn't even think about writing about China until I was about ready to come home. But during the time I was there, I did take a bunch of photographs and I did take a lot of notes.
You write about one of the turning points of China back in June of 1989 and mention that, unfortunately, the Chinese people and even some of the government authorities had misread Deng Xiaoping's intent in creating a new China.
Yes, you have some people that were very optimistic that bringing a version of capitalism to China would eventually result in democracy. That was very erroneous. That was not Deng's intent at all. He wanted the money. He wanted the industrialization. He wanted a lot of what you get in the modern society, but he did not want democracy at all.
Your book also begins with an interesting chapter on American and Chinese public attitude. What were some of the ways that you found they were different and similar?
I think to characterize American public opinion, it basically is one of ignorance, because Americans have a tendency to be very involved with their own home concerns, and they don't want to get too involved overseas or entangled with foreign countries or foreign problems. The Chinese, it was kind of interesting, because when I talked to various Chinese from various walks of life, I found that their government really wasn't very popular to them. They tended to be very impressed with American democracy and our freedom, and they really liked a lot of things which I don't know are particularly positive, like Hollywood pictures and singers and things like that. Some of the things, though, that were a little disturbing was a lot of the Chinese have a very strong nationalistic spirit with relationship to Taiwan. That is one area that they tend to be strongly in agreement with their government. They think that the Taiwanese should be taken over by China and not allowed to be an independent country. But in many other respects, they were very critical of their government. And as a matter of fact, when I was in another city, I got to know a landlord for the apartment that I was living in. He would listen to BBC and Voice of America regularly, and he had a shortwave radio. He preferred that to most of the news that came from the government. The government over there is not very shy about touting how wonderful they are and how much good they do for the people, but I think the people do not have that positive a feeling about their government.
Xi Jinping has made it one of his primary goals to counter corruption and graft. In your chapter, Economy and Graft, the economy and graft seem to go hand in hand quite a bit.
Yes, actually, I think in the future, I really feel fairly certain it won't be too far in the future. A lot of the government, especially leaders like Xi Jinping, is going to have strong regrets about the corruption and graft in China, because a lot of money has been wasted, lost through these events. And I think Xi Jinping is concerned about that. So far, it looks like he is going to be successful in combating a lot of corruption and graft. Deng Xiaoping created basically what's called New China, and it's been pretty successful from the standpoint of creating a lot of wealth in China. You have to look at the negative side, and that is the fact that it's based on greed. Greed is, of course, a weakness of humanity that's from the very beginning of mankind. I think that you can't have a government that is based on greed and expected to survive. I think the Chinese people inherently have an ethical basis from the past to judge the government. And I think that ultimately that judgment will cause the failure of the communist regime.
One of the biggest chapters in your book is government, justice, corruption, and politics. And touching briefly on the issue of Taiwan, as you mentioned, it's on your list of the coming collapse of New China. A lot of people have written about the possible collapse of the country's government and why it would happen. You actually list 15 different things.
Yes, because I don't take a simplistic view of the future of communist China. A lot of people seem to think corruption or various other things are going to cause the communist regime to disappear. I don't think it's going to be any one event. I think it's going to probably end up being a combination of various events which become overwhelming to the government, some disaster that causes a cascade of events which ultimately lead to their demise. That's why I listed so many different areas, is because I don't think any one is going to cause the communist Chinese regime to collapse.
Jim Hammond, author of New China, Reflections, Analysis, and Conclusions of a Layman. His book is published by Author House. Well, whether you happen to be one of our Chinese listeners, a layman, or a Laowai, everyone's welcome to hear the latest world news. It's coming up next on International Edition with Steve Norman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for joining us today on Daybreak Asia.